always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Good afternoon. Welcome into the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, Tuesday edition. Titanic Tuesday edition. It is indeed, biz boy. Oh boy, do we have a lot to catch you up on. Near and far, all across the heartland and around the globe. I'm Tim Jones. My co-host, my partner, Chris Arps, is still on that USS assignment that he's been on the last few days. He'll be docking back in St. Louis tomorrow. He'll be back on the program tomorrow. I'll be joining us live from Indy. I'll be in Indianapolis. Yeah, I'll be heading across the heartland a little bit, 4 hours to the eastward. Have a little conference to attend with the ALEC folks, but I'll be able to join us and our show remotely tomorrow for the entire program. So it'll sound like we're both here in the studio through the wonders of modern technology. I'm joined, of course, in studio by the master blaster himself, the guy who makes all the magic, Joey V. How you doing there?
Doing wonderful. Did you make that swim meet? Hope you didn't get wet at the swim meet last night.
So, Joey, you know how usually after the show, just to give you guys a little look into, you know, and if you watch us on the cameras, you see a lot of this activity. Rumble, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, newstalkstl.com for all of our streaming services. You can watch us do radio. Here we are. You'll notice sometimes as we wrap the show up, you know, Joey and I kind of get to our tasks and we'll work in the studio for a little while. He's doing his producer things. I'm catching up on a million zillion emails and posts and things like that. Yesterday, I blew out of here, lickety-split. Joey, I drove hell's bells back to Eureka to find out that the meet had been canceled. So,
no consolation prize.
You know what the positive news was, Joey? I was home in the daylight earlier than I usually am. And
that's
so
even better.
Got to spend some more time with the family. Good quality time with the family with my wonderful wife, Suzanne, and lovely daughter, Abby, who was supposed to swim last night. And, you know, you're darned if you do, darned if you don't, right? So as soon as they canceled this meet, Joey, the storm blew through and then the sun came out and it was a beautiful evening last night. So if they had waited an hour, they probably could have got it in, but you know how that goes.
Whoever made the decision was getting real hungry. They just wanted to get home.
Probably so. So that was just a practice meet. That was a home practice meet. And I think the real actual competitive meet start this week, but, daughter Abby went and swam this morning with a bunch of her friends at Rockwood Swim Club. So she's a swimmer in our family. She's the long distance swimmer and, I can swim. I'm a decent swimmer, but I look at her and her going chugging back and forth in that pool, those 50 meter laps. I don't know how she does it. It's amazing. She's like a fish. So
I was in scout camp once and we had to swim a mile nonstop. I did basically side stroke the whole time. You got a little badge once you finished it. And I had noodle legs getting out. I thought I had come back to Earth after being in weightless gravity in space. I just could not even stand. It was incredible.
Competitive swimming is no joke. And the ladies, the gentlemen and ladies I know who swam in high school, or especially at the collegiate level, they are like some of the best human specimens I know. They're still in like excellent shape decades later. And Abby is, I know, wanting to aspire to that, and she's gotten a good start. So she's only a freshman in high school, and her best stroke is the hardest. Her best stroke is breaststroke. And she's faster than a lot of the girls her age or older. And so that's great. And she does well in all the others. So, yep, we'll see some swim meets throughout the rest of the summer. So we've got a great show for you here today. We're going to be joined by David Stokes. He is the director of municipal policy at the Show Me Institute. Costs still rise by millions for the dreaded St. Louis Convention. Look, the St. Louis Convention Center is not dreaded. It seems like its management is. When does it end? We're going to talk to David Stokes about that. And how about the fact, did you see this local story, that a Baldwin chief, I'm assuming police chief, misused criminal database and ran hundreds of names, report says. So we're going to dig into some of those local stories, some of those local issues at 4:25. Of course, throughout this first hour, I'll bring you up to speed on the failure known as Dr. Fauci, and we'll dig deep into that with Dr. Randy Tobler at 5:25. At the speaker stump speech today, I got a special speaker stump speech. I've been saving this for over a week, and it kept getting bumped because of some of the bigger news of the day, the Trump verdict. We have the Hunter Biden trial. Both of those trials are show trials, by the way, for different reasons. You couldn't have had a worse venue for Donald Trump. You couldn't have a better venue for Joe Biden and Hunter Biden. No, they're all the same thing, part of the Biden criminal crime family. The only way they could have had a better venue for this Hunter Biden show trial in Delaware would have been if they would have had it at Joe Biden's beach house, right? Maybe in the backyard, maybe in the den, maybe by the pool. They could have just had the little kangaroo court out by the pool, declared Hunter the poor Fredo, misbegotten son of the Biden family. Little Godfather reference there for all you Vic Porcelli fans. And you could have just declared him not guilty and moved on. Now, if there is a guilty plea in this Trump trial or in this Biden trial, if there's a guilty plea in the Biden trial, the Hunter Biden trial, I will be shocked. Look at how much faith I have lost in our criminal justice system. I am a lifelong attorney. I was a practicing attorney for 20 years. I still keep all my licenses up to date because you never know. I still do my continuing legal education every year. I still watch the law very carefully and closely. I speak with Zach Smith, Chris and I do, every Wednesday. So I still know the law. I still have a lot of friends in the legal profession. And so I'm someone who has been in and around the legal profession since I went to law school in 1993. I went to St. John's University School of Law in 93. I graduated in 96. So I don't know. I'm not a math major. How many decades is that? We're talking 30 years, right? Yeah, 30 years, 31 years. 31 years that I have since I started law school. I can't believe it's been that long. How did that happen? I don't act that old. Just ask my wife. But here I am telling you that, and I shouldn't be able to tell you these things, right? But because our justice system has been so politicized, something that was never supposed to happen in this country, this nation of laws, of law and order, the rule of law being tantamount, right, to everything that we do, justice being blind, the scales of justice being balanced, then how come I, as an attorney of 30 plus years experience, having litigated before just about every court in Missouri and as a prosecuting attorney in the city of and in the county of Nassau, state of New York, where I got my start after school, how is it that I'm sitting here telling you that under my best legal, it's really not even a legal prediction. It's just it's more of a political prediction, which I shouldn't be able to make about. I'm able to make a political prediction about the law. That shows how bad our system of jurisprudence has fallen. And I'm predicting right now, and I hope I'm wrong on all this. I hope I'm happily surprised. I am going to predict right now, and I've mentioned this before, that Donald Trump is likely going to be sentenced to some sort of jail time. Now, it may be, you know what the judge could do? He could like sentence Donald Trump to like one day in jail and then give him credit for time served, because when Donald Trump was booked, right, he technically had to go through a jail system. Like when Donald Trump was booked on those felonies, he had to go in and be fingerprinted and so on. I think the famous mugshot was from the Georgia case, not from the New York case, but he had to go through a booking procedure. That's technically being in custody. So the judge, I guess I'm giving the judge, Mershon, the benefit of the doubt when he deserves none. But he could have it both ways, Mershon could. He could say that he sentenced Donald Trump to a jail sentence of one day, but then Donald Trump never actually serve a day in jail because he could give him what's called credit for time served for that, for that booking procedure. I'm just kind of making this up based upon my experience, as a former prosecutor. So he could do that. He could sentence him to more than one day. He could sentence him for several years. So I'm going to predict right now, whether it's one day or 20 years, that Donald Trump is going to get some sort of a jail sentence from this New York case. I'm also going to predict that Hunter Biden is going to walk out scot-free of that Delaware courtroom, and basically in the Biden criminal crime family's backyard, right? And I should not be able, and I'm fairly certain about these predictions. Again, I hope I'm incredibly wrong, and if I am wrong, I will happily apologize, because then I will be able to say justice was actually served. Donald Trump should not serve a single day in jail, whereas the evidence appears to me to be so extremely strong in this Hunter Biden case that he should be convicted of something in that matter. In fact, how wonderful is it that in the Hunter Biden trial, we're able to actually talk about the crime that he committed, because it's understandable and it's clear. Hunter Biden was charged and is being pursued in this case for a criminal gun violation, right? He was a drug user while buying and possessing a firearm. That's a thing. That's a crime. We still don't know what Donald Trump was convicted of. And all the lefties out there saying, well, it was a business records violation. Okay, well, those were misdemeanors. Tell me what business records violation he committed in furtherance of what further crime? Well, there was the election interference. Well, do you know that? Because it wasn't specified on the jury form. Well, he was trying to defraud the IRS. It was a tax violation. Well, did it say that on the jury form? Well, no, it was a further business records violation. No, we don't know what that underlying, we still don't know what that underlying crime was. It wasn't specified in the indictment. It wasn't brought forth as evidence through documents or witnesses at the trial. It was sort of cursorily addressed at a very high 35,000 foot level in the closing arguments of the prosecutors, which is not evidence. And then the jury was given a jury instruction where they kind of could choose their own adventure as to which one they wanted to choose. And we don't know what they chose because it wasn't on the jury verdict form. Whereas in the Hunter Biden case, we know exactly what this alleged crime is. We know the elements of it because it's a thing. It's actually recognizable. So how sad is it that in 2024 America, I, as a practicing lawyer of 30 plus years of experience, I can make a political prediction of what's going to probably happen in these two cases because of who's involved and where the jurisdiction and the venue is. That's not how it's supposed to work in the United States of America. That's how it worked in Soviet Russia. One of Stalin's lead henchmen, I put out the quote last week. It's a quote that's often attributed to Stalin, but it was actually his right-hand man. His right-hand man said, "Show me the man and I'll show you the crime." So in the case of Donald Trump, that's very true. We have no idea what crime Donald Trump was actually convicted of, but show me the man, I'll give you some Trump derangement syndrome, and then I'll show you the crime that he allegedly committed, whether he actually did or not. With Hunter Biden, show me the man, and I'll show you the acquittal. He's part of the ruling regime. His family's in the White House. They're the Bidens. They're part of the deep state. They're part of the swamp. So he can't be convicted. It's a sad place in the United States of America when we know what's going to happen to criminal matters because we can adjudicate them through a political lens instead of actually through a judicial one. Dangerous place to be. That's called a banana republic. Hey, we're going to talk to David Stokes. We're going to shift gears back to more of the local scene. We're going to talk to him at 4:25. We will have the speaker's stump speech on the Great Barrington Declaration. Do you remember the Great Barrington Declaration? I thought that was very appropriate to bring that up 4 years after the fact it was written, in the context and in against the backdrop of Tony Fauci basically going to Capitol Hill and saying, yeah, we pretty much made up everything that we forced you all to do, and we really had no evidence on which to base it on. And by the way, I can't really even remember what we forced you to do, because I really don't want to recall it, because I'll probably be perjuring myself or maybe subjecting myself to worse criminal liability. And so Tony Fauci basically went up to Capitol Hill again this week and lied and obfuscated himself through another congressional hearing. So I thought it would be appropriate to give you the Great Barrington Declaration from from October of 2020, and ask you if that's maybe more of what we should have followed versus what the government made us do. At 5:25, I think that's a perfect segue then into Dr. Randy Tobler. We'll ask him about the Fauci testimony, the Hunter Biden trial, and the other news of the day. Two quick announcements before we head to our first break. We have got two awesome events coming up the last week of June. Yes, you can see your entire News Talk STL family, not once, but twice here in the month of June. On Tuesday, June 25th, we will be at the St. Charles Funny Bone at the streets of St. Charles. We'll be Saving America 2024, the economy and the courts, featuring two very special guests, Zach Smith, who you hear every Wednesday here on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, and Joel Griffith, who we had on last Friday. We've got the legal expert And we've got the economics expert, Zach and Joel. Two very interesting topics. How about the fact that Joe Biden just issued this this totally bogus, politically motivated, electorally demanded executive order where about the border, whereby Joe Biden said he previously couldn't do anything about the border. So perfect time for you to learn how we can save America here in 2024. Tickets are free, but we need you to book a seat. So all you need to do is go to newstalkstl.com and hit the Saving America banner and sign up for your tickets. We'd love to see you there on Tuesday, June 25th. Chris will be there. I will be there. A lot of us will be there from the station. 2 days later, we have an event that all we need you to do is show up for. You can come for the live broadcast from 4 to 6 p.m., the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, live once again at Johnny's Hideout in beautiful High Ridge, Missouri. We'll be out back on the big giant deck, the Sunset Stage, the Sunset Patio, broadcasting from 4 to 6 p.m. And then we're going to take our dog and pony show inside. We're going to get you all fired up around 7:30 p.m. at Johnny's, and then we will be presenting the debate on multitudes of Johnny's giant big screen TVs at Johnny's Hideout. We want to pack the place with all of you in News Talk STL Nation. And that is a free event. We'll be providing some food. Of course, the bar will be open for you to engage in any adult beverage libations if you'd like. And we'd love to have you join us. So two great events here at the end of June. At 5:45, we'll, of course, prepare you to hand you off to Larry Connors USA. And then Joey and I will make sure that you've learned everything else you need to know about this Tuesday, including whatever's on Joey's mind today.
Oh, thank you. It's great having Chris gone. I get to talk a little bit more. No, nobody wants that.
We love the exchange. All right, so producer Joey V, Tim Jones here today. Chris Arps will be back in studio tomorrow. In the meantime, we will be entertained and informed by the great David Stokes, the Director of Municipal Policy at the Show Me Institute. What is up with the multi-millions of costs, millions of dollars of costs at the St. Louis Convention Center? When does it end? David Stokes will try to answer that question for us and more when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show. 101.9/94.1. This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
New details today on why this local top cop was let go. Chief Douglas Schaeffler was fired by the Baldwin Board of Aldermen back in December.
After allegations made by police officers, they hired an outside investigator who they say found five substantiated allegations against the chief, including purchasing alcohol while on duty and or in uniform, misuse of a system to obtain criminal and traffic information for non-law enforcement purposes, and harassment, discrimination, and or retaliation of employees. The mayor says the chief also operated a city vehicle after consuming alcohol.
Ooh, yeah, you hate to see stories like this. We are such big defenders and supporters of our men and women in blue. And unfortunately, though, in every profession, you have people that make look, everybody's innocent until proven guilty. Well, unless you're Donald Trump, or just maybe anybody the left doesn't like these days. But you hate to see these types of allegations. This is a bit of a complicated mess of a story. Let's bring in our next guest and see if he can help us sort it all out. David Stokes over at the Show Me Institute.
In high school, you talk about spikes. I had a very short spiked.
It was like, I knew there was a spike somewhere in that stuff.
It wasn't very punky. It was more Leave It to Beaver-ish, maybe.
As he does every Tuesday afternoon around this time, David Stokes, at David C. Stokes on Twitter X. Of course, also, showmeinstitute.org. David, good afternoon. Welcome back to the program.
Good afternoon, guys. Great to be on the air with you.
Yes. Chris said he was boycotting you because you weren't in studio today. No, he's on assignment, so he'll be back next week. So there you have it.
And I will attempt to be in studio again next week as well.
Ah, so it's the hook of Chris Arps. I understand. Very good indeed. So, David, like I was saying, we hate to see these stories about our men and women in blue. But you know what? Every profession, no one's perfect. People make mistakes. Sometimes people do things, you know, horrible things that they shouldn't do. What happened, David, as best we know, in the city of Baldwin regarding their former police chief?
Well, a lot has happened in the city of Baldwin, and that's the interesting part in the Post stories and the Tony Messenger columns on it. You know, a lot of this goes back to a controversy from a couple of years ago where somebody wanted to run for the Board of Aldermen, and the mayor didn't want that person to run for the Board of Aldermen.
Ah.
So the mayor and the city attorney filed court papers to remove that person's that person's name from the ballot as if that person wanted to have their name removed, but they never actually contacted the person whose name they removed from the ballot.
Oh, no.
So, and that sort of got a complaint by my former colleague here at Chomey Institute and a former, until recently, a Baldwin City Alderman, Kevin Roach, who may be listening right now, and he filed a complaint and really led to a lot of it would have never been investigated if the alderman, Kevin Roach, hadn't filed that complaint and started asking these questions about how did the city and the city attorney pretend to represent somebody and remove them from the ballot without ever contacting that person. It was a very unusual case, and it led to a number of additional investigations, which I believe, and in multiple steps involved here, and not always direct ones, you know, then they started getting reports on the police chief, and people, so they started investigating that, and it turns out, you know, there's all this stuff like buying beer in uniform, you know, fine, that's against the rules, so what, as long as he's not drunk on the job. But it turns out he's just frequently running criminal background checks on people for no legitimate reason, and that's what Tony Messner was sort of documenting, and this has all come out through public information requests, FOIA requests, by Alderman Kevin Roach and others, that the former police chief is just sort of, if he ran into somebody or met somebody, it was like, boom, time to run a criminal record check on him. And that's very, very disturbing. Even if nothing harmful was done with these checks, and I don't think there's any claim that anything truly harmful was done with them, but other policemen in the office were sort of trying to tell him that, you know, you can't just run a criminal record check on somebody for no reason. There has to be a legitimate reason. And that eventually that got out. And that's a major part of the reason why he was fired recently. And also, I presume why, you know, because he sued over his firing. But it'll be real interesting to see how that lawsuit goes forward with all this information coming out.
Yeah, we entrust our public officials with a lot of authority, right, David? I mean, they have access. I'm familiar with the system that he has alleged to have improperly accessed, the Regis system, and we entrust our public officials. They get access to a lot of information that the otherwise common Joe and Jane would not. And so with that access comes great responsibility and accountability as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's good to know that there are police, like the police officers who told him no on certain things. It's good to know that there are police officers out there saying, no, you can't just run a criminal record check on somebody for no reason without authorization, just because you met them and you're curious. And it's good to see police pushing back and saying no, and then the city, you know, doing its investigation and finding out and making some and exercising disciplinary efforts with it. Because it's just, it's clearly, and this shouldn't have to be said, but it's clearly wrong to just have somebody in law enforcement pulling somebody, whether you're running a background check or pulling somebody over for no reason. I mean, that's clearly very troubling. And I get, you know, we want to trust our police officers if they're walking the beat, and maybe you trust them, a veteran cop, to know when something's up and have a sense that something needs further investigation, even if they, you know, there's no dead giveaway right there. And we want to trust our police to do that. And I have no doubt that many great policemen do use that sort of sense of a situation to move forward. But also here you have an example of a chief. You know, he didn't just do this once, which might have been the example of, you know, I have a sense something's up here, but just repeatedly using the system. And that's just wrong. And it's good to see, you know, discipline exercised here.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with David Stokes. He is the director of municipal policy at the Show Me Institute, showmeinstitute.org. David, in a story that has echoes of the ongoing boondoggle known as the Loop Trolley, we'll head a little bit further east and we'll talk about another apparent boondoggle. I'm wondering, David, do we do anything in the St. Louis region on time and under budget? The St. Louis, apparently not. The St. Louis Convention Center there. So, David, of course, everybody's familiar with something we commonly refer to as the Dome. Even though the, even though our football team's gone, but our football team is back. Now we have the Battle Hawks. Of course, that's where they play. There's a ton of conventions there, throughout the year, which is great, you know, for tourism and bringing money into the city. But apparently, the convention center expansion has become a boondoggle in and of itself. David, first of all, what was the original plan here? What were they hoping to do to that complex downtown?
You know, they always want to expand it. There's never any effort to just say, it's good, let's manage it well. You know, a decade ago, they hired consultants to see what to do with it. And shockingly, the consultants hired by the tourist industry recommended expanding the convention center. It's like the answer is, you know, the answer is when you only have a hammer, you know, every problem's a nail. And in this case, the answer is always spend more tax money to sort of lure more tourists here. And tourists are great, but I've always been troubled by the assumption that taxpayers need to be subsidizing the hotel and restaurant industry like this. But leaving that aside, you know, they started this multi-pronged project, and needless to say, costs have just ballooned, and they keep ballooning. And then every year or so, it appears that the head of the CVC, the Convention Visitors Commission, comes before the City Board of Aldermen or the County Council and says it's all under control, and then months later you realize it's not under control. And the costs are up, and that's the story in the Post-Dispatch this past few days. There's two of them that, you know, it's up another $20-30 million from the estimate that was given just a year or two ago. And that one was already much, much, much higher. And I want to share a quote from the Post-Dispatch story because I think this sums it up well. And I'm going to read it exactly here so I get it right. The numbers referring to being the cost overruns and the estimates of construction increases to the point where they don't think they have the money to finish it. That's how bad it is.
Good Lord.
But other officials, and I'm reading the quote here from the Post-Dispatch story, other officials defended the numbers. Rich Bradley, the president of the City Board of Public Service, said overruns aren't unusual in such undertakings. He said the project in question actually compares favorably to most. It's very typical for project overruns on these types of construction projects, paraphrasing at the end. And what I want to get to is that is so true. It is typical for project overruns, but it's not accidental. It's not coincidence that government projects like this, medium size, large size, whatever, they're so consistently undersold to the public in a way to get them started. Mm-hmm. And then once they've started, you know, they just deal with the cost overruns. And it's not an accident. There have absolutely been studies about this around the country and around the world that when these things are sold as they are, just know that it's being underpriced to get voters to approve it, to get politicians to be able to sell it to voters, whatever it takes, and then they'll deal with the cost overruns later. And we see that in so much, and it's so frustrating. And right now, the convention center is just the latest example.
And then, David, the taxpayers are on the hook for this, right? Would you explain how that is so? I mean, I'm assuming it's either a diversion of funds, or it's a reallocation of funds, or it's spending funds they don't have and maybe raising taxes later. And this is to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, isn't it, for a cash-strapped city?
Absolutely. And county. Remember, this is funded by the city and the county. Mm-hmm. In the city, but it's city and county. And it's the primary way that the Convention and Visitors Commission and this convention center is funded is through hotel taxes. So obviously some people are going to say, well, tourists pay them. They're not the citizens of St. Louis City and County. Well, that's tax money for the citizens of St. Louis City and County, and it's being wasted on this project, which many others, most well-known Bob Clark of Clayco, is saying it's just an absurd, wasteful project that's not going to accomplish anything. But so, yes, these are tax dollars, primarily hotel taxes. Not only hotel taxes, there's some restaurant tax money from the city of St. Louis that goes to the CVC for some of these funds. But it's mostly the hotel taxes we see around the region that get. Not every city in our region has its own hotel tax, nor should they. I like the shared hotel tax system that we have. But that's how the CVC and the Dome and the Convention Center are primarily funded. Mm-hmm. And in this case, that's how it's being wasted.
Mm-hmm. You know, David, maybe they should worry more about the crime situation before they go continue to expand things. Because I've been to I've been to some trade shows recently. And first of all, it seems like they have plenty of space down there. But secondly, what I've heard from people from out of town who have been visiting, they've said, you know what? They tell us, you know what? The event organizers, the people that we connect with, our points of contact, they tell us, be very careful at night. Do not travel and make sure you travel in packs. And, you know, don't spend much time out on the streets of St. Louis. That's kind of a horrible message to be delivering to visitors to our town who are coming here for a trade show, isn't it?
Right. And so, and then they're wondering, because they talk in the article, they feel that they're not properly competing against Nashville and Indianapolis and Kansas City and others. Not that some of those cities don't have their own serious crime problems, but right. Like, how can you be pitching a giant convention when it says, all right, you're going to have a great time. By the way, don't go out at night.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's sort of hamstrings them here. And of course, the press has been, and I'm not blaming the press, I'm just speaking, the news has been so bad for prominent criminal acts,
yeah,
against tourists
reality
downtown.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a Google search away for any convention organizer around the country who's thinking about St. Louis. Like, you put that into Google and what's going to come up. So obviously people are concerned, and it's just another indication that, yes, nothing is going to happen in the city of St. Louis until the crime problem is addressed. And I don't think, you see the mayor and others, they keep talking about how crime is down, and it may be down slightly in some ways, but it's still way, way, way too high. And you also know that certain parts of this crime is down narrative are simply that people have given up calling the police. 911 takes too long. They know that the minor crimes aren't going to be investigated. And that's just what you have here, to the point where, as you said, the people with the CVC are telling their tourists, hey, don't go out at night, but otherwise, thanks for coming to St. Louis.
Yeah, it's really sad. David, let's end up on a high, happy note here. I noticed at showmeinstitute.org that y'all have an event coming up, a great event coming up Tuesday, June the 18th, the Next Gen Connection Hour with the Show Me Institute, featuring your CEO, the wonderful and talented Brenda Talent, and Chief Economist Aaron Hedlund.
That's going to be a lot of fun at Cafe Napoli in Clayton, and I hope some of the listeners can come out. We also, for your listeners listening online in Southwest Missouri, we have events next week in both Springfield and Joplin, where my colleague Elias Sapelis is going to be giving presentations at events in both cities. So if you're online listeners, check that out. And for those in St. Louis, please consider joining us at Cafe Napoli on the evening of was it the 16th or the 18th?
The 18th. Tuesday, the 18th.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
We'd love to have people come out.
After you appear with us that Tuesday, we could all hop, skip, and a jump over to Cafe Napoli. That could be wonderful.
Sounds like a wonderful idea. I'm all in.
That may be a good plan. ShowMeInstitute.org for the information on that event on the 18th and everything else that you need to know at the Show Me Institute. David Stokes, our guest here this afternoon, as he is every Tuesday afternoon at David C. Stokes on Twitter X. David, thanks so much. We'll look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thanks, Tim. Talk to you next week, sir.
Very good as well. All right, 4:43 in the Heartland. When we come back, I've got a ton of breaking news for all y'all to get you up to speed on what happened in the Hunter Biden gun trial. You know, somebody made a great point to you. I don't know if it was on the Dan Bongino show. It was on our station, of course, because, of course, I listen like you all day long. It may have been Bongino that was like, where's all the gun nuts on this? Like, why aren't they up in arms about crackhead Hunter running around basically committing felonies by possessing a firearm while hopped up on, you know, whatever and then some? That's a great point indeed. I'm going to give you an update on that trial. We'll also check some other headlines of the day. What's next for the Trump Show trial and more when we come back on the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9/94.1. This is News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
So who are we likely to see on the witness stand then?
After the FBI special agent, the list includes Hunter Biden's ex-wife, Kathleen. It also includes the widow of his late brother, Beau, a woman with whom he also had a romantic relationship, Hallie Biden, both testifying at the prosecution's request and likely to go into some of the text messages exchanged with Hunter Biden. And with the discovery of that gun, in October 2018 by Halle Biden in Hunter Biden's car. According to the prosecutor's pretrial filings, Halle Biden discarded the gun in a dumpster near a supermarket here in Wilmington, where it was later recovered. It's almost certainly going to be embarrassing and humiliating for Hunter Biden.
And yet, all they need is one Bidenista on that jury in order to reach hung jury or maybe even not guilty status. You know, I mean, if they can't come to a verdict, you know, if they have the split jury, if they have a split jury and they just can't reach a decision, then that's a hung jury. You know, I don't, you know, you need unanimous support for a guilty verdict. And, you know, it's always hard to know why they get the not guilty stage if people just give up and throw in and go, okay, I'm never going to be able to convince a couple of these people, so let's just go with not guilty. So that's kind of the long and short of it. But, you know, they're in Delaware. Joe Biden, you know, as Larry Connors there said in that promo for his show, which is coming up at 6:05 as it does every Monday through Friday, Larry Connors, USA, immediately following Jones and Arps. As Larry said, yeah, Big Daddy Biden just happened to be making, Jill was at the courthouse yesterday. I mean, they're like, look, Delaware is a really small state. These towns that the town that the case is being presented, I heard, is a population of 70,000. You know, that's like Chesterfield and Wildwood put together here in the St. Louis County region. If folks are familiar with those municipalities, it's not a lot of people. It's like everybody knows everybody. And, who wants to be on a jury where you convict the favorite son, even though he's a crackhead loser, and then have to walk around town and get sneered at by all the left-wing progressive Democrats in your neighborhood? I mean, think about that. This is a terrible venue for this if you're hoping to get a conviction, which is why I don't know if they will. Here's a little bit of bombshell news that came out of the trial today. Kind of an extracurricular type of headline. This was not something that actually happened in the actual trial itself, but was kind of on the periphery of the trial. Melissa Cohen Biden, she's the lady you saw kind of smirking arm in arm with Hunter Biden yesterday as they walked into court. That's the current wife, you know, not the former lover of the, never mind. It's a whole, the Bidens are a mess. Melissa Cohen Biden, let me get to the story. Melissa Cohen Biden, the wife of Hunter Biden, lashed out at a former Trump White House aide during a Tuesday appearance in court to support her husband, who's been charged with three felonies, not one, not two, but three. I know it's not 34 like Trump, but come on. You know, this is the most we're going to get for the beloved son. Three felonies stemming from a 2018 firearm purchase. Her remarks were directed at a guy named Garrett Ziegler, who was sued by Hunter Biden last year for publishing the contents of his infamous laptop. So Garrett just publishes what was already in the public domain. It had been abandoned at a computer shop. But of course, now Garrett has become public enemy number one for the Biden criminal crime family. Approaching Ziegler at the trial, Biden's wife pointed her finger at him and said, quote, "You have no right to be here, you Nazi piece of stuff." Right? Yeah. What wonderful people the Bidens must be at cocktail parties. Ziegler, who leads the nonprofit group Marco Polo, did not respond to Melissa Cohen Biden's remarks at the time. I thought Marco Polo was something we played in the pool, Joey. Remember, did you play that as a kid?
Did you have that last night at the swim meet? Is that the warm-ups at
the game? Well, there was nobody there. So, okay. No, we couldn't find him. We literally, Marco!
Nobody answered.
Nobody said Polo. Yeah. Ziegler, who leads the nonprofit group Marco Polo, did not respond to Melissa Cohen's taunts at the time. Ziegler confirmed the encounter, which was reported by NBC News, and told the outlet, quote, "It's sad. I've been sitting here the whole time and haven't approached anyone." So this guy's minding his own business, and one of the Bidenistas, Melissa Cohen Biden, has to come up and give him the business. This is great. This guy sounds like he has an awesome, he's a happy warrior, right? Unlike the unhappy leftists on the Democratic side of the aisle. He says, "Just for the record, I'm not a Nazi. I'm a believer in the U.S. Constitution. I haven't said one thing to them." Regarding Ziegler's encounter with Melissa Cohen Biden, Marco Polo, the organization, wrote in a tweet, quote, "The wife has the same level of impulse control as Hunter." to the family bringing decency back, anyone who is perceived as opposition is a Nazi. Truly contemptible liars and scoundrels, the group added. We don't respond in kind in the back of a courtroom because we're gentlemen who do not berate women. Whoa, I wonder what she's going to come into the courtroom and say tomorrow. Hunter Biden's lawsuit against Ziegler, which was filed last September, alleged that he had violated federal computer laws by hacking into the now infamous laptop that was left in a Dell. Can you really hack into something that's been abandoned? You know, I'd have to reach back in the recesses of my property law days in law school. So Hunter Biden, because he was so hopped up on goofballs or whatever, abandons his infamous laptop, which has all sorts of things that I can't even discuss on the radio, plus probably all sorts of state secrets that he and Big Daddy Biden sold to the Chinese, the Iranians, and Lord knows who else. So he abandons that. Are you really breaking the law when you're examining something that's been completely abandoned property? I'm not sure that this suit is going to, well, once again, it probably depends on what venue it's in. So that was the exchange between those two. Hey, in other quick news I want to get to today, as you may have seen, Joe Biden decided to sign an executive order admitting that the border crisis that he caused is now something that he's going to have to finally address. And CNN notes why they're addressing these things at this point in time.
Immigration is the nation's top problem. You know, last time around when Biden was facing off against Trump, just 1% of Americans said it was the top problem back in May of 2020. That ranked, get this, 15th on the list of most important problems, according to the American public. Look at where we are today in May of 2024. 18%. My goodness gracious, what a jump from May of 2020. 18% of Americans say that immigration or something within that realm is the nation's top problem. That ranks second. So a clear movement from 15th to second in terms of the nation's top problems. It's not much of a surprise, Jessica, that President Biden feels like he has to make a move on this right now.
Yeah, a political decision, not a public policy decision that's good for the country. That's the only reason Biden's acting. Back with the Great Barrington Declaration, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.